Hello, and welcome to another episode of Film Favorites. My name is Bryce Vales, and with me, as always, is my good friend, Aaron Chase.
Hey, Bryce.
Hello, Aaron. We are inching oh so close, Aaron, to being halfway through the first 100 of this top 500 list, my top 500 favorite films of all time.
Oh my god.
We are entering the 450s.
Nice.
This episode. So, we've had a pretty good streak, actually. Quite a few episodes in a row. Some good movies.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the bomb to drop.
I think you're going to keep waiting. Okay. We got some at least decent films for the foreseeable future.
Okay.
All right. So, yeah, no need to worry. This is an easy episode right here.
Okay.
All right. Do we just want to start off with number 460?
Yes.
Let's just get right into it.
Yes.
All right. Number 460. Director Nora Ephron's 1998 film, You've Got Mail.
Huh.
Meg Ryan, Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Greg Kinnear, Parker Posey, both great character actors who I love. Nice little supporting roles in this. And, yeah. Of course, Dave Chappelle.
Yeah, that was the only thing I know about it.
Yeah.
Dave Chappelle's in it, and it's about a guy. I know that it's a romantic comedy, but it's a romantic comedy from the 90s. So it has this, like, creepy slant to it from a modern view?
Yeah, a little bit. I think most people, when they say that, they're talking about Nora Ephron's other, honestly, more popular, more well-liked film, Sleepless in Seattle.
Is that what am I getting those confused?
You might. Well, that one is often... People talk about how that's kind of creepy. Well, it was kind of creepy back then, but, like, nowadays it's really creepy. They don't meet... Like, basically the entire film, she's just kind of stalking him.
What is the difference between the films?
They're different films.
I mean, like, from what I know of You Got Mail, there's a widow or widower?
That's Sleepless in Seattle.
Okay. Well, I guess it is what it is. All right, so can I get a mild breakdown of...
Sure. It's, Tom Hanks is sort of this... mogul, this businessman. He's part of the family who owns Fox Books, basically like Barnes & Noble or something. Big, giant book retailer. And Meg Ryan is the owner of the Little Shop on the Corner. This little, you know, bookstore, little family-owned type deal.
Very cute so far.
Exactly. And, oh man, they, you know, it's this love-hate kind of thing where, you know... They're rivals, and she is against everything he stands for, and they're both in relationships that are doing okay, but there's something missing. And they just start anonymously chatting, like on room, like...
And they don't realize that.
They don't know that they're...
Oh, wacky!
I wouldn't say wacky, but yeah.
Hijinks? Antics.
Antics ensue, hijinks ensue, but don't get your hopes up for, like, big. This is a very sweet, simple kind of romantic comedy. It's probably my favorite film that Nora Ephron directed, but there's another film that she wrote that's much higher up on the list.
Okay,
we'll leave it. Nora Ephron fans know which one I'm talking about.
Do they?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's so good. And I said it, I'm not a huge fan of Sleepless in Seattle. That's not on the list, although I think most people prefer that. I am one of the people that find it kind of creepy, and I just don't... I find You've Got Mail to be... It's kind of a standard fare rom-com, but it's elevated by Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan. Their chemistry is fantastic. They are both sweet. It's really a charming film, I think. Like I said, a lot of great character actors. I said already, Steve Zahn's in it, who's a favorite of mine. I wish he was in more stuff. It's a very sweet romantic comedy. One of the few on my list. It's not a genre that I really am drawn to, but this one is exceptional just by virtue of the cast, and it's nice. It's a nice movie.
Okay. Yeah. So far. If the other two horrify me, I don't think I would mind watching this movie.
I also don't think you would mind it. And Dave Chappelle.
And Dave Chappelle.
Being the token. Okay, here we go.
Oh, shit, is he?
It's been a while.
It was the 90s.
I am more woke now. Maybe I will find that to be true. Maybe I will hate this film.
We'll see.
We'll see. I doubt it. All right. Next up, number 459. We're in the 50s. 450s.
450s.
Director Todd Browning's, although uncredited, the director of photography, Carl Freund, did a lot of the directing work on the film. Their 1931 film. Dracula.
Oh no, this is going to be so hard. This is going to be so hard. Okay.
It's Dracula,
man. Fuck, it's Dracula.
Talk about a classic.
I know. That's going to be one of those that I feel like I'm supposed to watch.
It's an important film.
It is.
It is one of the... It's a classic. One of the quintessential Universal monster movies. Right up there with Frankenstein, which came out the same year. Yeah. Bela Lugosi. I mean, the role that defined his career.
Bleh.
By far. Not really, but yeah. He doesn't really go bleh all that much. But it's a very good old school monster movie if you're into those kinds of things, which I don't know if you are. But I think I mentioned Carl Freund, who is the director of photography. Great classic cinematographer. Did Metropolis, did a lot of great films, and was actually the director of photography who invented that flat lighting style that's used in sitcoms. He invented it for I Love Lucy. Before, like, every shot was sort of its own, like, lighting rigging.
Correct.
And here he devised...
Three-point
was a popular way of lighting something, with a key light, a fill light, a backlight. But not always the case. But the flat lighting he sort of made possible by... like having these, I don't want to get into it, but you know, that flat classic sitcom lighting style that is still used today in a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
The guy invented it and the way how to do it so that you're not creating shadows all over the place.
So far I'm torn, Bryce.
It's a big choice. The movie you're probably going to like more?
Yeah.
Or the bona fide classic?
Yeah, it's tough because, especially with me and my Dave Chappelle kick at the moment.
Yeah.
I have this burning urge to see what Dave does in a 90s rom-com. And Tom Hanks is great. There's a woman.
Meg Ryan.
Yeah. She's a woman. Oh. And no, but it's like the way you describe it sounds pleasant.
It is.
Sounds like a pleasant watch. Sounds like it's a more entertaining version of Finding Neverland. Let me elaborate. In that, Finding Neverland had this whimsical and it was pleasant, but in a more boring way for me.
God, you gotta stop using that word, man.
In a more slow way. In a more, get?
Okay.
No, but...
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, whereas this movie will also probably give me similar, not whimsical, but just pleasant feelings, but more entertaining.
I would say so. It's more sort of even keeled. Like Finding Neverland gets pretty dramatic at times.
Yeah.
And like I said, several times we teared up during it. Unlikely you're going to have that happen here. It is just a, from top to bottom, beginning to end, pleasant movie.
Yeah.
Dracula, it's, you know, mercifully short, which is good.
Mercifully is the good adjective for that.
I'm using it specifically for you.
Thank you.
I think it's a film you should watch.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not in the mood to watch it today, I understand.
But eventually.
I think you should. And there are other Universal Monster movies on my list.
Okay.
So if you skip over it this time, you'll have a chance to correct your mistakes.
Okay. I guess this will all kind of come down to the third one, so let's hear
it. It will.
Yeah.
And depending on your mood, you might dig this too, actually.
That's interesting.
All right. Director Stephen Chow and Derek Kwok, I am butchering those Chinese names, I apologize. Their 2013 film, Journey to the West. Stephen Chow.
Okay.
I've only seen three of his films. They're all on this list. And this is by far my least favorite, but I still like it.
Wow.
He makes very gonzo, zany, funny martial arts movies.
Oh, shit. Okay.
And this one in particular is very fantastical. It's like a fantasy based on a classic piece of Chinese literature,
Journey to the West.
Journey to the West. Sometimes when it was translated to English, it was called Monkey. If you watch it, that'll make sense.
This is, oh boy, this is going to be nerdy, but I'm connecting the, and I know this is Chinese.
Yes.
I'm connecting it to Japanese right now with Dragon Ball Z.
Well, those are different things.
But they, I'm pretty sure they use the same, it was the same format of story where.
I have not seen Dragon Ball Z, so I
no, know. But, you know, in Western storytelling, there's a general arc.
If you're talking about like the modern three-act structure?
Yeah, they do something different in Eastern culture with storytelling, but I've heard of this, the monkey thing.
Monkey King?
I've heard there's a... It's like the hero's journey, but the Eastern version of the hero's journey.
It very well might be. This is, like I said, Journey of the West is like a classic
right.
of Chinese literature from, the I think, the Ming Dynasty. And this is, you know, a pretty liberal adaptation of it. But it's zany, it's funny, it's got some fun action in it. It's not as cohesive as the other two films that are higher up on my list. But it's his most recent, mm-hmm. of at least of the ones that I've seen. And, yeah.
You know, it's funny, and I feel like as we continue to get higher on the list, I'm going to run into this more. I haven't seen any of them, and I kind of want to watch all of them for completely different reasons.
Yeah.
And I'm very curious about all of them. And as we get closer to the top, are we limiting it down to two, or we're going to do...
Eventually, we will limit it down to two, and then eventually, in the tippity top, we're doing one movie an episode.
Understandable.
Even if you've seen it, we're watching that shit.
That's fair.
All right.
But these situations are going to be tough.
Yeah.
This is actually harder than picking a movie I don't want to watch, because I kind of want to see all of these. So
that's nice. That's got to be an interesting feeling. It is a change of pace.
Very weird feeling. So all right. I guess pros and cons of all of them. My pro with Yes, I almost said Sleepless in Seattle.
I know.
My pro with You Got Mail is familiarity. Mm-hmm. I think out of all three, I'm most confident I will enjoy it.
I would say that is likely the case.
Yeah.
That is the safest bet.
And I think the main reason I want to watch it, if I'm being perfectly honest with myself, is Dave Chappelle.
He's not a lead. You know, mm-hmm. he's a supporting role, so you know.
I'm aware. I'm also curious about if he is the token black guy in the film.
I'm curious as well.
Kind of really curious about that.
It's been a while since I've seen him. I'm a little curious myself.
So that's where I'm at with that. The main interest is coming down to the cast, mm-hmm. Dave Chappelle specifically, and curiosity of what if he was the token black guy in this era. I'm just curious to see what that looks like.
Yeah.
Blah.
What the fuck? Yeah. Blah.
the vampire man.
Dracula.
Dracula is a classic monster film. Monster yes. movie. Classic. Like,
OG monster movie.
Yeah. And so I know that I'm not going to be entertained.
Probably not.
And if I am entertained, it's going to be for the wrong reasons.
Probably.
But there is this feeling of like, I should see classic films. I should know of this. But I'm pretty sure I know all the tropes.
Sure, probably.
Because it's such a famous and influential film. My hesitance on it is that it sounds like you have more that are better.
More that I like, yeah.
And because of that, it's getting lower.
You yeah. could say the same thing for all three of these films.
I believe it. This is a
rough although there are fewer romantic comedies on my list.
That was the other thing that made me curious is because you put it. I was never expecting a romantic comedy.
Right, not my cup of tea, generally speaking. Yeah.
And then the last one,
Journey to the West.
Journey to the West. That I love, like martial arts and stuff. I think that's really cool. I am also curious about that. It's a curiosity with mm-hmm. all of them. Oh fuck! And you can't give any. You don't want to give your biased or suggestions, right?
I mean, they're all. I like them all.
Yeah. So okay, I'm gonna. Fuck, this is hard. I'm going to take out... I'm going to take out Dracula.
I am fine with that. I'm fine with whatever you pick.
Thanks.
Okay, you're taking out Dracula.
Thank you. I'm taking out Dracula.
Okay, but that you better hope that when we get to something higher up, Universal Monster Movie,
I'll probably do that. Probably.
Unless it's something you really want to see. Okay, yeah, okay, you take out Dracula.
Take out Dracula. You said that there are more versions, or better versions of whatever this guy, the Journey to the West, whatever he's directed, there are better, or things you like more of his in the future?
There's one that I don't know if it's better, but I definitely like more, and there's one that I like better that I also think is just better. It's a better version of this, and actually, it's interesting. He, early on, he stars in a lot of his movies, and that happens a lot with, like, with a few martial artists. And he doesn't in this one, and I like him a lot, like as an entertainer. So that's another reason why I tend to prefer his earlier stuff, because he's in it himself. And this one he co-directed. I think he was the sole director on the other two, if I'm not mistaken.
Fuck,
so it's more like his vision.
It's actually really hard.
Yeah.
Man. All right. I'm gonna go with. Not Sleepless in Seattle. I'm going to go with You Got Mail.
Oh, I thought... Okay.
My logic for this is it sounds like with the monster movies and with this particular director whose name I don't want to butcher.
Stephen Chow. You can get
that. Oh, I can get Chow.
Yeah.
Stephen Chow. It seems like with these two, I'm going to get better versions in the future, and I don't think... Or better options of versions in the future, and I don't think I'm going to get many romantic comedies.
Off the top of my head, just straight up rom-com, because there's some romantic comedy elements in a lot of movies.
Yeah.
Straight up rom-com, I can only think of one.
And it makes me wonder why. What is it about this? Like, I want to watch it because I'm curious why it's even on the list, because why? That doesn't seem like you at all.
It's a nice movie.
Yeah, but with Dracula and with Journey to the West, as soon as you said that, I was like, yeah, it sounds like something Bryce would enjoy. As soon as I heard You Got Mail, I was like, oh, that's odd. That's an odd choice. So I think that's what I'm going with.
Very good. Also, I guess I didn't mention, well, since we're going to watch it, I'll mention it now. It's a remake, actually, You've Got Mail. Old, I want to say, Jimmy Stewart movie. Little Shop on the Corner, I think it was called, like the name of the bookstore. But they wrote letters in the past. They didn't email. So yeah, that's a little tidbit of information you probably don't need to know. But there it is. So, okay, looks like we're going to watch Nora Ephron's 1998 film, You've Got Mail, not Sleepless in Seattle. So, Aaron.
Yes, Bryce.
Tell me about You've Got Mail.
You've Got Mail is a romantic comedy steeped in 1998. It's a romantic comedy where two people have been talking over online. They don't know anything about each other. They've made it clear that they don't want to know any intimate details. Mm-hmm. So when the antics or hijinks happens later, it has some sort of logic as to why they haven't put the pieces together. They don't have enough information about each other. Tom Hanks is a rich guy. He's basically Jeff Bezos now.
What?
This is what I was thinking the whole time.
Okay.
Okay.
He's not that. Okay.
Okay, all right, before I get to my thought of this, but he is this big mogul guy, he's all about business.
Owns a big bookstore,
and she's a little tiny business, and he crushes her business.
Yeah.
Basically.
Runs her out of business.
And it's them finding love between each other, I guess.
I mean, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That sums it up.
Yeah. Where do we even start?
Where do you want to start?
I didn't like it.
No?
No. No, I did not. And I know I said it many times. I'll say it one time now, and I'll say, the only thing that keeps this movie afloat are these fucking actors. Like, there are scenes where if it was not Tom Hanks, I would have been absolutely done. I specifically am thinking of the grocery store scene.
Oh, yeah?
That to me, I know that he's supposed to be like, he's a businessman. He's a no-nonsense guy. I know that that's the vibe they were trying to come off, and he was supposed to come off kind of like an asshole.
Yeah.
But he was also helping her.
Yeah.
That scene was so fucking disgusting to me. Just on a personal level, as someone who has been the person behind the counter dealing with these pieces of shit, who are like, this is the lot. So, for context, for those who haven't seen You Got Mail, the woman, this is in the 90s.
Yes.
Let me reiterate, this is the 90s. The woman is in line for cash only, because apparently that was a thing in the
90s. That was a thing. Certain lines were for cash only.
And so she realizes that she went in the wrong line, and everyone's upset with her. Tom Hanks happens to be there. I don't think he followed her.
No.
He just happened to be there.
They keep running into each other.
Yep.
Early into the film, just by happenstance.
Yeah, they did that a lot. Eventually, I was just like, all right, it's a romantic comedy. Just accept that. But it was hard. It was hard. But either way. So he comes up, and he basically... He puffs out his chest, and...
He tries to put on some schmarmy charm to the cashier. And I'll be honest... Every time I agree with you. This scene, like, no way would that, like, would that work?
It wouldn't work. It was not charming. It was incredibly unlikable. Yeah. Like, incredibly unlikable. And I think it was hard for me to give a shit about any of the people that I'm supposed to give a shit about. The only reason I gave a shit about them was because of the actors. The actors just did a really good job.
I know you like Tom Hanks. I don't think you're a fan of Meg Ryan. How did you like her in the film?
She was a blank slate to me.
Oh God.
She was. You could have inserted any random short-cut haired lady into that film for me.
I thought you just said that you liked the.
I think the chemistry. The chemistry worked. So in that regard, like if I separate the two and I look at Tom Hanks's character. I am enjoying it because of the way, because just how Tom Hanks is. Mm-hmm. And then, I'm sorry, what is her name again?
Meg Ryan,
I see how she is likable as well.
She's very likable.
Yes, but to me she's bland.
Oh.
And so then them together had a lot of chemistry. So I like the way they work together. But her just alone when she was doing stuff, I didn't give a shit.
Oh, see, I'm not a big Meg Ryan fan, but I like her in a few things. And I like her in this. I think the character is really sweet.
Yeah, no, she is very sweet, but she to me is a blank slate. Like you could have just inserted a sweet lady in it, and it would have been.
I mean, she's not just sweet, you know. She's dealing with trying to be like the Godfather scene. You know, it's just like taking the mattress and just fight.
Yeah.
Which you liked that scene.
I did like that scene.
It was a very good scene.
I'm not saying it's not a bad movie. I just did not like it. I just didn't. The writing. The way they wrote those characters was just so unlikable to me, and the way it was filmed was so flat.
I told you. I think I told you when we started this. Like it is a by numbers romantic comedy.
God, yeah.
And I said the only thing is I really like the actors in it.
Yeah.
And I think the chemistry is there, and it's not as creepy as Sleepless in Seattle. So.
But it's still creepy.
There's a couple scenes that are kind of creepy.
The scene where she's sick?
I like that scene.
Okay. Well, let's let the listeners be the judge of this.
Let's break down. Okay. Well, no! You're going to make it sound super creepy.
I'm only going to say the objective facts.
No, but you're going to say it in a way.
Okay. Stop me
and
at any point.
And then he puts his hand to her mouth to shut her up. That's what you're going to say.
No, stop me at any point if I'm being unreasonable.
Go.
Okay.
I'll give you 2 seconds.
Tom Hanks visits Meg Ryan with flowers because he knows she's sick.
From Steve Zahn, who was her employee, the guy that they thought was the Unabomber.
He brings it up.
He tells Tom Hanks, because now he's working at Fox.
Right.
Yeah.
But that scene wasn't there.
He says. Right. Yeah.
So he goes over, and this is New York, so they have the call box at the bottom of the steps. She's like, no, I don't want you to come in. She says, no, I don't want you to come in. Few times.
Okay, there we go. That's the shit I'm talking about.
Okay.
Yes.
But it's playful and there is chemistry.
Yes, it's playful. She's like, I'm sick. Yes. It is not like, no, I don't want you to be here. Because earlier in the film, that actually probably be something that could come up because they're sort of antagonistic early on.
Yes.
But no, at this point...
At this point, they were cool.
They were okay.
They were okay. They had interacted enough to where this wasn't completely strange.
Yeah.
So he just goes over to the door. Like, if someone else walks in... And he just follows in because the door would have been locked. So he comes into the building.
Yeah.
Then he's just at her door. She lets him in.
Don't you, he's not just at her door.
She lets him in.
Yeah, she lets him in. She has a cute little scene where she's tidying up the place.
You'd have to watch it. Okay. You would just have to watch because Bryce and I are seeing two different things.
Evidently.
I'm seeing something real fucking weird and creepy. And you're seeing something...
A romantic comedy
from the 90s.
Yeah.
All right. Regardless of that. No, I would not say their chemistry was great. They had enough chemistry to where none of the stuff came off too bad.
Yeah.
But I just... All of the stuff that I found interesting, they didn't delve into. If anything, they ignored. Like his uncle daughter... And his uncle's sister?
I wouldn't want to get into that.
No?
It's his aunt.
His aunt and his brother.
His aunt, who is like 7, and his brother, who's like 5.
Yes.
Yeah.
When I know that the purpose of that is to set up like what his dad and his family, what they're like as people, and that he's been taking on this lineage and that he's going to break through from that. I know that that's...
Well, that's our hope. And we've seen enough movies, we know that's going to be the case.
That's going to be the case. I know that that's what they were going for, but that was far more interesting to me. That was just... It was weird.
It was weird. I don't know why I would want to delve into that.
I don't know why I bring it up in the first place, though. Other than what that goal... It was so strange. Like, the Godfather thing was subtle enough to where it was like, oh, that makes sense why that would get brought up. If that's one of his favorite films,
and there's a thing like every guy loves the Godfather.
Godfather, yeah.
Every guy knows the Godfather.
Every guy knows the Godfather, and it connected directly to who he was as a person and how he thought of things, and I liked that. The kids, the brother and the aunt stuff, I understood how it connected to character, but it was so strange. Like, I had to pause the movie to be like, what the... How is he related to these people?
And then immediately he explains
it. Yeah, then immediately explains it. But, regardless, stuff like that was too jarring and too strange for it to be ignored so much for me. It was like, well, can we... I want to know about that. That's weird.
I guess I just disagree. I think they bring it up, they talk about it for a minute, and...
Yeah.
Like, I'm good. Like, I don't... They could have made it a plot point, but that seems like that would be really weird
be
in a
really
romantic comedy if they just like delve into that.
I know.
How this 90-year-old man has a
fucking
7-year-old
daughter. That's so weird. Anyway, it was...
Which, you know what, that sounds creepy now, but like in the movie, it's creepy.
Yeah.
But like not in a like...
The way it's presented is not to be creepy.
No, and I think they achieved that. It's just... The facts of the matter.
Yes. It was just... Man, I liked Finding Neverland more.
Fair.
The reason for that was... And I won't use the word boring anymore. The reason for that was, while it did take a second to ramp up, there was a film style to it. It was flat, and then it was colorful and strange on purpose. Like, I knew the juxtaposition that was happening. It got better as it went forward. It stuck the landing. There was this heart that I could feel. You could feel the filmmakers gave a shit about this story. This felt like a bunch of guys with cigars and ties were like, how do we make some money?
I don't think Nora Ephron is a bunch of guys with cigars.
But who are the producers? Please tell me Harvey Weinstein. Please tell me.
I do not know, and I'm not going to look it up, just on the off chance. No, it wasn't Miramax. I don't think it was Harvey Weinstein.
But this didn't have the same heart. It felt paint by numbers, which is fine.
It's a very blasé, straightforward rom-com.
Yes. It's not a bad movie. It did exactly what it was intended to do. And its intent just did not sit well with me. The past few episodes, I haven't talked about race or anything.
Let's bring that up.
Yes. I've decided that I'm only going to bring it up when is necessary. And Finding Neverland, why would I bring that? For what it is, obviously.
It would almost be strange if there were.
Yeah, it would be very strange if there was black just characters. Black characters. Or any, not even just black people. I don't give a shit. It's not about... don't say diversity.
Sure.
Diversity. In a film like that, this is the upper echelon 1903 playwriters. And playwriters, but
these are theater goers and high to do, yeah, like, high society.
Yeah, it makes sense why the characters are the way they are. It makes sense why everyone looks the way they look. It makes all of that make sense.
Yeah.
Near Dark, not Near Dark.
Why are you bringing up Near Dark?
I know
that's right? Neat. I'm glad you finally remember the title.
Yeah.
Darkman.
Darkman was this cartoony, goofy thing where even if, and I don't think it was. Race didn't even come to my mind because it was so batshit crazy, and it was just like, sure, I can accept this crazy weird world. Race and realism does not matter, but a movie like this, where it's because it's filmed so flat and it's filmed in a very realistic manner.
All right.
Realistic in the sense that it's not stylized. It's
not, sure,
it just is. Because of that, it was hard for me to disassociate. It was hard for me to suspend my disbelief.
Whatever are you talking about, Aaron? So what disbelief is there to suspend?
The amount of times they ran into each other in New York City.
I thought we were talking about race.
I know, we're going to get into that.
Okay.
But suspending my disbelief. So the amount of times they ran into each other, I was like, it was getting to a point where I was like, this is either someone's following someone else, or New York is far smaller than I realized.
Or we're watching a romantic comedy.
Or we're watching a romantic comedy, or one of those three things. But, okay, race, whatever. Dave Chappelle 100% is a token black character. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Like, we are in New York City. It's... And it's the 90s. So when we watch stuff from the 30s and the 40s and the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, even the 80s a little bit, I know, but I'm trying to give... I'm trying to, like...
Give a little leeway.
Yeah, yeah, except that, like, you know, the 80s was over 30 years?
Yeah, it has
been over 30 years.
It has been over 30 years.
Yeah, I'm almost 30, so it's definitely been over 30 years. So there's this feeling of like, you know what? It is what it is. It's a time period. 98, this is almost the year 2000, almost the millennium. So it's weird to me. It's weird that shot where they're in...
Little Shop Around the Corner?
Yeah, they're in the Little Shop Around the Corner, and I want to say it's supposed to be cute, and someone's reading. Is it the old lady?
No, it's Meg Ryan.
Meg Ryan's reading to children. Very cute scene, and it's panning to all of these kids sitting there, and they're all wide-eyed.
All of these, what kind of kids, Aaron?
There's one Asian girl.
Yeah.
This little black kid in the back.
Yeah.
And this little redhead kid also, like, scrunched in the back.
Oh, thanks for counting us redheads.
I count redheads.
Oh, thank you.
Like, you guys get so much shit.
No comment.
Yeah.
Continue.
Either way. So, and it was like... It's just jarring for me.
And they're surrounded, we should say, by well over a dozen white kids.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, I know it's 1998, and I know that it's a romp. I want to reiterate, this is not a bad film at all. This isn't bad. It is just on a personal, in the same way that this list is personal to you,
mm-hmm.
Personally, I just... couldn't connect with the characters. If it wasn't for those actors, my God.
Yeah.
I couldn't connect with the characters. The filming of it was flat. The writing of it was boring to me. Or bland. The story was obvious, and I know it's obvious.
The plotting is very... Yeah, you see everything coming a mile away. I like the dialogue in the film. Mm. I think there's lots of cute lines. I like Greg Kinnear in it. He was the writer boyfriend.
Yeah, I liked him.
He was good.
But in the same way, Finding Neverland was very odd. The moment she coughed the second time, I was like, she's going to die.
Yeah.
She's going to die. But the way I forgot about that. There was a point where in Finding Neverland, when they were doing fantastic stuff, or they were working on the play, or they were acting with each other, or when Frederick was his name, the kid?
Freddie Highmore.
Peter? Anytime Peter was acting, I forgot about the mom. I forgot about everybody. And then when the mom got brought up, I was like, oh yeah, we're going to lose her. This is going to be sad. With this, I was like, I know exactly what's going to happen. And I know that the whole token...
Yeah, let's get back on that. Because there are two black people in New York City, apparently. It's Dave Chappelle and that one kid in the bookstore.
There's a kid in the bookstore who's... Oh, the kid who's hiding. Yeah.
The kid who's hiding.
It looked like they put him so far.
They shoved him way in the back.
And I know that for its time, that having token characters like that made people feel like, oh, but there's
a black person.
There's
in
a black
there,
person.
So it's not
so
a
it's,
racist
so
film.
It's, yeah. And I'm not even calling the film racist.
No,
it's not. But, it's from... I'm assuming this lady's white.
Oh yeah, Nora Ephron's super white.
Okay. It's from her lens of the world. In the same way those Madea movies are, I don't think they're good movies, but they're toe-to-toe. They're real-to-real black people. And that's not realistic at all. You don't go, it's not everywhere you go, everyone's black. That's not real. But it's from the lens of the storyteller.
Right.
So this isn't to say that the film is racist or anything. It's more that... It is so indicative of the era, of the time. It felt...
And of the filmmaker.
And of the filmmaker. And it was... It is so distracting to me now. I can't not notice it anymore.
I don't blame you. There are a lot of films, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot more on the list. Because in Hollywood especially,
yeah,
a white man has reigned supreme.
Yeah, but... And it's storytelling and it's art, and you write about what you know. So I don't want to attack the film and call it racist. That would be unfair.
But we could only give it so much slack.
I guess. It's Dave Chappelle being there was distracting. You might as well have just put another white guy at that point.
I think it would have almost been less distracting.
Yeah, I would have been less distracted. And partly if I'm my own bias and it being Dave Chappelle was one thing. He was also a standout. He was the funniest, one of the funnier parts.
Yeah, one of the funnier parts. It seemed like he wrote a few of his lines.
Yeah. And he seemed weirdly aware. Dave himself seemed very aware of like, oh, I know what I am in this. And that was weird.
Was his last scene with Tom Hanks at the coffee shop?
I think so, yeah.
That's like halfway through the film.
Yeah, he just disappeared. Everyone disappears.
Disappeared, yeah.
After the little tiny shop falls apart, everyone disappears but Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks.
Yeah. Here's one of my biggest problems with the film, from a structure and story standpoint. When I look back on this film, like when I remembered, it had been some years since I've seen this. Bless you.
Thank you.
Bless you.
Thank you.
I wish that the last third of the film had been the last half of the film.
Yes.
I wish that Tom Hanks would have been this. Okay, this sounds. Yeah, never mind. I'm not going to word it as pursue. I wish that Tom Hanks's character. Fuck you. I wish that Tom Hanks's character. Was meeting up with Meg Ryan and they were becoming friends earlier in the film, like at the halfway mark. I think that should have happened, and not at like the second act, like the end of the second act, leading into the third.
Then it felt rushed.
It not even just rushed. That's kind of some of my favorite stuff. I like them being together, and it being nice. Like when I think of the film, I honestly am thinking I'm forgetting, like, that middle act. I'm thinking of the beginning, the setup, and I'm skipping to the end where, yeah, they've been antagonistic, but now they're being friendly, they're becoming friends, they're going out on, like, friend dates, and it's really pleasant.
Yeah.
And it's, from a certain lens, could be kind of creepy, because Tom Hanks knows that she is Shop Girl, the handle she uses, but she doesn't know.
Right.
That he's the man that she's been emailing.
Speaking of suspending your disbelief.
Oh, boy.
How the fuck does she not put the puzzle pieces together?
I do not have to suspend my disbelief for that.
Really?
Yeah, no, I don't... I don't find it weird at all.
It just... It was... As soon as... I think I would have preferred it if they both stayed in the dark. If they were being on equal footing, and then they both figure it out mm-hmm. at the same time. Because they would have been on the same playing field, and that will they, won't they, that would have been more fun. Once Tom Hanks figured it out, it was like, oh, I have a secret. It felt... Every time they were interacting, and he was like... Maybe he's like this. Why don't you ask him this? It was like, why are you playing with her fucking... Just tell her that it's you at that point.
See, that's the cute part.
To me, and this is a personal preference thing. To me, that's not cute. That's just weird. Like, if I was Meg... If I put myself in Meg Ryan's shoes, as soon as Tom Hanks walks over with the dog, I'd have been like... But how long did you know... How long did you know that we were talking to each other? Since how long had it been since they first since the date the coffee shop date?
Because he did know then. Because
that was in around Christmas.
It was around Christmas, and this was spring, so it'd been a month or two.
So for about a month to 2 months, it's one thing.
Yeah, but for a good chunk of that, like he was not like only for in the last week or so was he actually like.
Pursuing.
Yeah.
Were they still emailing through that month?
They were.
That's weird to me. And this is a personal preference. You seem to be defending the movie now.
I mean, I like the movie.
That's fine.
I have more problems with it now upon this watch, again, with the structure and Chappelle.
I think if I wasn't talking so much shit, you would probably say more negative things about this movie.
I very well could be. Yeah. But you're not saying many positive things. I have to bring them up.
I'm not... It's so funny because it's not bad, and I know it's not bad. You ever watch a movie where you're like, this is not a bad movie?
But it's just not for me.
Yeah. This was not for me. I regret not picking the vampire movie.
Dracula? You don't remember the word Dracula?
I regret not picking Dracula, honestly. I thought that this was going to be... I thought that I was picking the more out there. I know.
I said paint by numbers romantic comedy.
I know.
Starring Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan.
Out there relative to you. Mm-hmm. Like, when I think of Dracula, I'm like, yeah, that's Bryce.
Of course Dracula's on Bryce's list.
Yeah, or when I think of a crazy wild martial arts, which I watched the trailer for, my God.
Journey to the West.
When I think of that, that sounds like Bryce. So I was going... In my head, I was going for the riskier move. And I know.
Huh.
In my head, my logic was like, okay, of these three movies, this is the weirdest one, ironically, out of what Bryce would normally put in his 500. So I'm going to go with the weirder movie. And the weirder movie was, ironically, the most not weird.
I don't know how that's ironic. I said it's very before.
I know.
It's a straightforward romantic comedy. I told you up front what it was.
Know. I'm trying to think. Okay, have you seen 500 Days of Summer?
Yeah.
Okay. I love that romantic comedy.
Uh-huh. I did not. It's not on the list.
Right. Okay. So fucking You Got Mail beats out 500 Days of Summer in romantic comedy for you.
I like it better.
It upsets me. This upsets me. But... And then I guess we can talk about 500 Days of Summer.
Sure, let's talk about 500 Days of Summer.
So...
Talk about creepy.
Was he creepy?
He was pretty creepy.
But they... The way they present... First off, the filming of it was creative.
I like the editing. That whole musical number is fun.
Jumping back and forth.
Yeah,
like that.
Like I said, the editing where you're... Right. Like you're kind of... Like jumping around time frames,
yes.
In the relationship,
it made it dynamic. I think if you had watched it from start to finish,
then it would be really creepy.
It'd be super creepy. but in the unlikableness of the main character, like it felt earned that he became more likable. Like when he
see, I didn't find him any more likable towards the end.
Because he was finally... We'll start on a whole other movie.
Yeah.
Basically, it is not a bad film. I just did not like it.
Oh.
Yeah. There's really... And what I suggest... I would suggest it to women. No, you know what, though? This movie felt like one for the ladies in the 90s. This definitely felt like a female film in the 90s.
Romantic comedies tend to draw larger female audiences than male audiences. And Nora Ephron is a popular name in the genre. She had already done Sleepless in Seattle, and that was a huge hit with ladies, especially. And yeah, I'll be honest. I can't think of a single guy I've ever talked with about You've Got Mail. But I've talked to plenty of ladies in my life about You've Got Mail.
Do they all like it?
Yeah, it's nice. It's a nice movie. Don't cry, shop girl. Don't cry, shop girl. Oh.
I don't... Yeah. Oh. I think I'm just not the demographic.
I guess you're not.
At all.
I don't know how I am.
I think because you're a movie person in general. But it... I think if you're like a 53-year-old housewife, you would love this movie.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, just get your wine, get your cheese.
Especially if you're white.
Yeah. I can't see many black women relating to... Yeah, actually. This movie is for middle-aged wine moms. That's the demographic.
That's the subtitle, actually.
Yeah, that makes sense. But I really want to reiterate my disdain for this film.
Reiterate. Go ahead for it.
It's not because it's a bad movie. It's just not for me. It clearly wasn't made for me. Like, Mortal Kombat. Remember Mortal Kombat?
No. I mean, I know what Mortal Kombat is.
Right. That movie...
Oh, God, you're talking about the movie. Yeah.
The demographic for Sleepless in Seattle, if I sat them down to watch Mortal Kombat, they'd be like, oh, I don't want to... This is bad.
I don't like this. I don't like this at all.
That's how I felt watching this movie.
Are you the demographic for Mortal Kombat?
When it first came out, yeah, I loved Mortal Kombat. Johnny Cage.
And see, I'm here as a kid, like, growing up. Like, I was, what, 7 when this came out?
You were watching this at 7?
I probably didn't see it when it came out. I probably saw it in 2000. I was probably like 10 years old or so.
It's cute.
And I loved it.
Okay. Well, I would suggest it for 40-year-old moms.
Wine moms.
Wine moms, specifically.
Very good. Well, I'm glad you liked You've Got Mail. And let's just keep this streak going, Aaron.
Yep. I fucked up the streak.
I knew this was a risk. I was like, he could pick it. And I honestly don't know if that's a good or bad thing.
It wasn't a bad thing. I'm not upset that I watched it.
It's not like Potop or Thief.
No, no. Those were, like, painful to watch. This, I was bored at points. I was annoyed. I was flustered. But I wasn't in pain. Watched it.
Watch You've Got Mail. At the very least, you won't be in pain.
Yep. Yeah. I don't know what else to say about it.
All right, Aaron. Well, hopefully, I don't know. I haven't looked at the next episode's 3 movies, but hopefully, we'll hit a bit of an upswing and we'll come back from this stronger than before.
Mm-hmm.
Stronger as a couple.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for watching. You've Got Mail with me.
Thanks, Bruce.
Until next time.
Until next time, bro.
This has been a Buddy System presentation of Film Favorites.